will meet the disciples. Of course, they're usually found in the New Testament and the Gospels. But you're also going to see some deep prejudices. You're going to hear about dogs and demons. And in the center of this story is a heartbroken woman and a Jesus who doesn't seem to care. At best, he seems indifferent. At worst, insulting. So this is the passage. It's from Matthew chapter 15, beginning in verse 21. This passage is also recorded in Mark's gospel. But listen to the story. Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession." Jesus did not answer a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, "Send her away, for she keeps crying out after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." The woman came and knelt before him. "Lord, help me," she said. He replied, "It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs." "Yes, Lord," she said, "but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." And her daughter was healed from that very hour. So, as Margot mentioned, I'd love to tell you this story from the perspective of the Canaanite woman, the woman in that story. It's a privilege to be here today. Now, you're probably wondering, how does one request a person from the Bible to come and speak at a tea, right? I mean, how does that happen? There are official forms, of course. There are forms, and your women's director, Margot, filled all of them out. And we're just working on that sound. And of course, she worked on them, and through certain channels, these forms made it all the way to heaven and into Gabriel's hands. And he's the one who gathers us, and he determines which Bible speakers will go to which churches all around the world. Now, of course, it is Lent, so it's busy, okay? And you're probably sitting here wondering, why did we get the Canaanite woman, right? Like, where's Mary? Mary, the mother of Jesus, she's really, really busy. I mean, everybody wants Mary, the mother of Jesus, and you have to book her years in advance, okay? And I just have to tell you, the Canaanite woman, this is my first church gig. Yes, I hope you're okay with that. But as Gabriel was, handing out churches and reading through profiles, we were all sitting there. I mean, there was Abraham and Moses and the apostles, of course. They were there, Peter and Paul and Matthew. And then you've got all the women. Of course, Mary, mother of Jesus, Mary Magdalene, the other Mary and the other Mary and the other Mary. They were all there. Joanna was there. Lydia, the first Western Christian. Your technology is so strange. Not quite accustomed to it.
Oh my goodness, I don't know if I'm ever going to come back to this world. But anyway, so we were all sitting there. Gabriel was reading through these church profiles, and I was at the back of the room. And up came Hamilton Congregational, and I thought, oh, this sounds interesting. These women sound fabulous. So I raised my hand and I said, I'd really like to go. And Gabriel said, Who are you? I said, I'm the Canaanite woman. And he said, are you in the Bible? I said, yes, I am in the Bible. I'm only there one time, but I'm in the Bible. And I've never had the chance to tell my story. I'd love to tell my story. Well, Rachel was, you know, Rachel from the Older Testament. She was sitting up front, and she was still looking for a church as well. And come to find out, she's not a tea drinker. So today she is in Seattle speaking at a coffee shop. But I love tea, so this is a perfect fit. So here I am, Gabriel. I had to remind him of my story. And he said, now, why is it that you want to go? And I said, well, I'll never forget the day I met Jesus. I'll never forget it. And I want to tell these women about it, because it changed my life. And maybe it could change theirs too. So here's my story. The day that I met Jesus. Imagine if Jesus was walking through your town, your village. What would you say to him? I mean, would you know what you wanted to say to him? Do you have this one thing that, oh, if Jesus walked by, I'd know exactly what to say to him. I'd know what I'd want to ask him. I know what I'd want to tell him. Well, Jesus came through my town, and that was not usual. I mean, this was off the beaten path for him. My town was not part of Israel proper. He was walking, really, through foreign territory. So this was not common. But when I found out that he was walking through my town, I knew I wanted to see him, and I knew exactly what I wanted to say to him, because I knew what I needed. So I ran to him and I cried out, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. I knew that's what I needed. Out of everything in the world, I needed mercy. Have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession. Do you know what it is that you'd ask for if Jesus walked through your neighborhood? Have mercy on me. Now, you might think it's a little strange that I ask Jesus to have mercy on me and not my daughter who was suffering terribly. But do you know what it's like to care for somebody long and hard and with everything you've got? You come to the point where you need mercy. That's what I needed. So I came to Jesus as a woman in need of mercy. Now, the way your gospel writer says this, I cried out to Jesus for mercy. Do you know that in his gospel, Matthew, he only records two times in which a woman begins a conversation with Jesus? It was a bit unusual. That didn't happen all the time. Usually men are initiating those conversations. But here I was, a woman in need. And great need. So I initiated this. Lord, have mercy on me. I came to Jesus as a woman. I came to Jesus as a mother. A mother who desperately needed his help. Now, I don't know about you, but when you think of your thing that you would run to Jesus with, does it keep you up at night? I mean, do you think about it? Do you toss it around in your minds? Do you toss and turn because you can't get it out of your head? For me, I could not get my daughter out of my head. I wasn't up at night counting sheep. I was counting the number of times my daughter had turned to self-harm. I needed mercy. I was counting the number of times my daughter would scream in a fit of rage, and her face so contorted she was almost unrecognizable. I needed mercy. I was up at night, and I was counting the number of times that my daughter would cry in confusion because she didn't understand what was happening to her. And you know what? I didn't either. And I didn't know how to help her. I needed mercy. I was up at night counting the number of times that as I walked my little girl down the street, other people from the village crossed to the other side and sheltered their normal children. I needed mercy. So I cried out to God as a woman, as a mother, Lord, have mercy on me. But I wasn't just crying out as a woman and as a mother, I was crying out to him as an outsider. I was someone outside of the Jewish faith. I'm the Canaanite woman. I'm not Jewish. And Canaanites, or those who are not Jewish, were not approved recipients of God's mercy. You see, God's mercy, that was intended for God's people. His people, that's what he gave to them. And he showered mercies upon mercies. God's mercy is his loving kindness given to those who don't deserve it. It's his faithfulness to his people. It's his commitment to maintain a relationship with his people. And I was not one of his people. So I was coming to him as an outsider, begging for his mercy. Was there a crumb for me? Anything for me? So I came to him as a woman, as a mother, as an outsider, in desperate need of God's mercy. But I also came to him as an enemy. The way Matthew writes my story up, he calls me the Canaanite woman. I think that's such a hoot, because in my time, there were no Canaanites. They had been long gone from the land. I mean, they lived around the time of Moses, but that was centuries before I lived. So why on earth would he ever refer to me as the Canaanite woman? That's the way many of the Jewish people referred to me and my people. Because the word Canaanite, it conjured up certain negative images. Once a Canaanite, always a Canaanite. We were Israel's enemy from ages past. The Canaanites were the people that God told the Israelites. He said, they cannot be in the land. The Canaanites were idol worshipers. They lived such depraved lives. Human sacrifice was part of their religion. The Canaanites were God's enemies. So when Jewish people, even the disciples, saw someone like me, they saw more than a foreigner. They saw the enemy of ages past.
They saw a woman who was dangerous, their downfall, someone to steer clear of, someone that you would never help, somebody to keep your distance from. That's how I went to Jesus. As a woman, surprising. As a mother, as an outsider, not an approved recipient of God's mercy, even as an enemy. But I went to him because I knew the mercy I needed. The gods of the Canaanites, oh, they were vengeful. I needed a God of mercy. I needed the true God. And I knew that Jesus, he was the only one who could give me the mercy I needed. But no response. He said nothing. It was as if he were waiting for his disciples to speak up, to see what they would say to this woman, this desperate mother, this outsider, this enemy. And they did. They said, "Tell her to go away and leave us alone. She keeps crying out after us." And Jesus took their lead. He said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. But I knew the mercy I needed, and I knew who could give it to me. So I was bold." And sometimes, ladies, we have to be bold, right? Sometimes we have to make that heart-racing decision, that stand your ground stance, and cry out for the mercy that we need. And that's just what I did. Even with the onlookers glaring, even though I knew the disciples wanted to just brush me away like a piece of dirt swept away by the bristles of their broom, I knew what I needed. And sometimes it's so hard when people are glaring and staring, and you hear the whispers of the crowd that say, "She doesn't deserve mercy." But you know what? They didn't either. None of us deserve it. So I cried out again. And it took everything I had. Can you imagine the scene? Here I am. Now I am in the middle of the road, on my knees, and the flow of foot traffic has stopped because of me. And on my knees, I cry out, "Lord, help me." Yes. And there was a moment when I just wanted to slink back into the crowd. But I knew the mercy I needed and the one who could give it to me. So you think this is it, right? This bold woman puts everything out on the line, and this is the point at which Jesus raises her up and says, "Yes, mercy for her." But that's not how it happened. Jesus said something so completely surprising, it will make your jaw drop. He said, "It isn't right to toss the children's bread to the dogs." Now, maybe you grew up in church here and you're thinking, "Oh no, my Sunday school Jesus never said that." I was there. He did. He said that. And maybe you want to say, "Well, that's not what Jesus meant. He wasn't insulting you. He was just saying he had to feed his people first. And then you were a little dog, a pet. He would feed you later." And it's true, he did use the word little dog. But it was an insult.
I mean, dog was the word that some Jewish people called foreigners. Those dogs. It was an insult. And at that moment, I remember thinking, I could stomp away in anger. I could just slink back into the crowd. I could run away crying, but I still knew the mercy that I needed and the one who could give it to me. And what I began to understand what Jesus was doing. He was teaching his disciples. That's what he was doing. Yes, he called me a dog. It was an insult, a pejorative term. But what he was doing was he was trying to demonstrate, or he was demonstrating to the disciples what their biases look like when they were acted upon. Jesus didn't think of me as a dog, but he knew that they did. And he wanted to say, this is what your biases look like. Are you comfortable with this scene? Are you okay with this? Are you okay brushing away a heartbroken woman, mother, outsider, even enemy? Are you okay with this? Jesus was teaching his disciples. But he was also testing me. There was a bit of a twinkle in his eyes when he said that word or that phrase. And I looked at him and I said, yes, Lord. But don't even the children, or don't even the dogs get the crumbs that fall from the master's table? He said to me, woman, you have great faith. Do you know what Jesus was doing with me? He was testing my faith. He was testing it. You know, when a person plays a musical instrument, maybe a stringed instrument. And in order to play a stringed instrument, you have to tune that instrument. And maybe you turn a tuning peg. But if you turn that peg too much, that string can snap off and break. Picture Jesus tuning my faith. Maybe tuning your faith. Making adjustments, and you feel the pressure. Everything is getting tighter and tighter, but he will not tune beyond the limit. He won't let us snap, but boy, I came close. But all of that was to test my faith, to see if I really believe that he was the one who could give me the mercy I need it. Great tests are given to great students. Have you been given a great test in your life? That means you're a great student. You know, I remember that moment like it happened yesterday. On my knees, a gaggle of disapproving stares and men who didn't think I should be there. But I could not be frazzled by that antagonistic crowd. I knew the mercy I needed. But I remember staring up at Peter in particular. And when Jesus said, "You have great faith," just a flash came across his face. And I know why. Not long before Jesus came walking through my village, Jesus was up on a mountainside praying. And he had sent his disciples out on a boat, out on the Sea of Galilee. And it was in the wee hours of the morning, and the disciples were tired and weary. And is that a ghost? They saw something out in the water. They thought it was a ghost, but it was not a ghost. It was Jesus walking along the water. And Peter was in that boat, and he got so excited, he jumped out of the boat and began to walk toward Jesus, keeping his eyes on Jesus walking on water. But then the wind began to whip up fierce fists of water. And Peter got scared, and he took his eyes off of Jesus, and he began to sink, and he was going to drown. I mean, he was scared for his life. But Jesus came, and he grabbed him and pulled him out. And do you know what Jesus said to Peter? "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And that moment, when I was on my knees, and everything had stopped around me, and everybody staring at me, and Jesus said, "You have great faith." That was a lesson Peter would never forget. I mean, I don't want to brag or anything, but Peter, the big disciple, had little faith. The little dog had big faith. Just how it worked out. We're fine now. We're all in heaven. Everything is good there. We all get along. But God has mercy on everybody, even the most surprising people. And he taught his disciples that day that his mercy has no geographical boundaries. But God's mercy extends far beyond borders, beyond races, religions, creeds. God is lavish with his mercy, his loving kindness. He wants to pour it out on those who cry out for his mercy. And the fact of the matter is, we all need mercy. I needed it as a woman, a mother, an outsider, an enemy. I guess we could say we're all enemies of God, in need of mercy. And that mercy hung on a wooden cross. That mercy was laid in a tomb sealed with a cold stone slab. That mercy was a miracle that rose with the dawn on Easter morning. That mercy is the peace treaty signed in the blood of Jesus Christ that says, "Forgiven forever, fully, freely forgiven." Nobody deserves God's mercy, but he gives it to us just the same. So ladies, if Jesus came walking through your town, through Hamilton, Wenham, Gloucester, Ipswich, Rowley, what would you say to him? Would you ask him for mercy? Have faith, ladies. Have great faith. Because God has mercy on you. Have great faith. Thanks, ladies. Now I'm Pat. Thank you for listening. It is a strange story in Scripture, isn't it? I wanted to share with you a story. It's from the book.
But it's a real life story of a moment in which I needed mercy. There have been many moments. This is just one story. My husband has worked for the same employer for 25 years. And they lost a contract a couple of years ago. And many people were let go. And his job shifted a little bit. And, well, you'll hear what happened. But Rich began coming home with flowers. He never does that. I mean, never. And our life is just busy and a bit wild, it's not wild, but it's, you know, it's very active. We've got three little boys. And so I'd see these flowers. He'd usually come home on a Monday. I'd see the flowers, and as the week went by, I wouldn't notice the flowers anymore, and I would just think, okay, where are the, you know, maybe they died or somebody, whatever. This happened maybe for 3 weeks, and then one day, while it was calm, I said, what is going on with those flowers? I see them, and then they're gone. And he said, those aren't for you. And I said, what? As part of this restructuring, the person who used to do the flowers at work was no longer there. So Rich took up the job of getting the flowers for the office. So he would come, he stopped at Whole Foods in Linfield on his way back home, would bring a beautiful bouquet of flowers or a vase of flowers and put them out. And then he took them, I guess, Tuesday morning. I hadn't really noticed, and brought them to the office. And of course, I was thinking they were for me, and they weren't. And so we laughed, ha ha ha, and I thought, you never get me flowers. But one day, he actually came home with flowers. He put them down, and he said, these are for you all week. You can have them all week. I said, great. And they were tulips. And he brought them. It was in March, and it was, you know what March is like here. It was just freezing cold, and they were yellow tulips, and they were all closed. You know, they hadn't opened yet, so they were tight, tight, tight. And I had had the kind of day, the kind of week, that I just kept looking at those tulips and saying, when are you going to open? Like, come on now. We need some spring here. We need something. Just some good news here. And this is what I wrote. So this is a true story. By the end of the week, the tulips had been forgotten, and the only fragrance in the house was the smell of taco meat, simmering in the pan and permeating every nook and cranny of our home. The kitchen was in full swing, and I was head cook. We topped our shelves with mounds of cheese and a heaping side of suppertime insanity. The dogs, we have two dogs, and a cat, played a wild game of tag under our feet. The kids raced back and forth, fetching Lego and army men and spelling homework. Rich and I barked out orders to insubordinate soldiers. The scene really was uncivilized. It's nothing like this. Nothing. We were waiting to hear from the doctor about one of our son's lab results. He had lost 8 pounds in 3 months, and he was complaining of belly pain. I had wedged behind my back an old-fashioned water bottle. It was between the curve of my back and the back of the chair. I had pulled my back out, or my back went out doing something very heroic. Not really. I was in bed, and I pulled up the covers, and my back went out. That was it. My back went out. There it was. So my back punished me. Somebody dropped a glass. It broke all over the place, and it was a total and complete circus. The red-cheeked little one, Timothy, zoomed by, and he crashed onto my lap like a wave on an unsuspecting shore. My back jolted, and then he wagged a pudgy little pointer finger in the direction of the vase with the tulips. And he said, Mom, look, your tulips hatched. And the whir of the carnival circled around me like a carousel, but I couldn't hear it anymore. The flowers had hatched. And that made me smile. I smiled because I loved that he said hatched, and I smiled because he was a red-faced, sweaty bundle of little boy, and I smiled because he was aware of what would make me smile. tulips that hatch will always make me smile. And then I remember that even in the roar of the uproar, tulips still hatch. When I least expect it, the tulip hatches, and God's mercy blooms. And maybe you're in a place right now and you're waiting for the tulip to hatch. I want to encourage you to keep great faith. Don't walk away. Don't say it's getting too hard, or Jesus doesn't care, or he's not listening, or the wind or the waves are too much. Keep looking at him, and the rest of it will become background noise. The wind, the waves, the jeering crowds. Ladies, keep great faith. God has mercy.
In the morning, when I rise, in the morning, when I rise, in the morning, when I rise, give me Jesus, give me Jesus, give me Jesus. You can have all this world. Give me Jesus. When I am alone, oh, when I am alone, oh, when I am alone, give me Jesus. Give me Jesus, give me Jesus. You can have all this world. Give me Jesus. When I come to die, oh, when I come to die, oh, when I come to die, give me Jesus, give me Jesus, give me Jesus. You can have all this world. Give me Jesus, give me Jesus, give me Jesus. You can have all this world, just give me Jesus.
Thank you.